Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams. Your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up. We record it and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese Podcast. Today, I have a guest that I have been waiting many, many, many years to sit and interview. First off, I want to shout out to Kathy Lum, Tony Lum's daughter, for setting up this interview. And today, thank you for coming on the Vietnamese Podcast.
Thank you. I'm very happy that I have a chance even talk briefly about my life to you. Well, I've been 3-time refugee in my life. At the age of 10 years old, in 1946, by December, when the French want to invade back to Vietnam after the World War II, and then our family scattered all over, run away from the city dwelling of Haiphong Port, and we run into a neighboring district of Kiến An, and I got lost by myself.
How old were you?
I was then only 10 years old.
Wow.
And then I caught a family friend of my parents. The lady lost her husband as well. It's a flock of refugees running. The whole city of Haiphong Port running away out of Haiphong Port into the countryside to avoid bombardment by the French. And I was stuck there with the family. But all I had was a jacket, a shirt, a jacket, and a short. And it's getting colder. But every other day, I wash my clothes and then hang up. They live temporarily at a roadside house, but behind is the Rocket Mountain. So I stay up in the back of the Rocket Mountain and wait until my clothes get dried up. And after staying there for about 3 days, then the lady told me that I got to go and look for my family because she cannot afford
to keep you,
feed me.
Yeah.
It was about 2 or 3 miles from the Kinan Township. I had to walk back to that township, walking by passing a cemetery where the resistance force at that time, the communists called themselves resistance force. And then most of the body they killed was decomposed. The smell terrible. I got scared. I walked by myself and walking into the town of Kinan, there's a group of 3-4 people, they call themselves cadres, working for the resistance force. And I was so thirsty and hungry at that time, looking at them taking the breakfast, and I look at them. Finally, they say, "Where you from?" I say, "I am born by myself. I lost my family." So they offer me some glutinous rice, soy, and then I say, then they say to me, "If you mind to take care of cattle."
Wow.
So, no, I don't mind. So they put me there. Luckily, only 2 days after, my second brother, I mean, I have older, 2-3 older brothers. Our family of 6 children, 3 boys and 3 girls. And the second senior brothers was able to get my mother from the hospital. She got a miscarriage and for some reason he found me right at the township, and then I was with my mother and himself. We walk across the highway number 5 from Haiphong to Hanoi. At that time, the French already took the position. That means they already in command of the whole area. But we're so afraid. We walk into a temple, but we stay there until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So then we walk across.
So can I ask you something? In your mind now, at 10 years old, was the French the enemy or the resistance the enemy? Or how did you feel about these people?
Well, at that time, we were told that we have to stay away from or avoid the French invasion there. Plus the fact that we were also propagandized for the fact that the resistance force are the one that defends the national integrity. And that's the reason that at my age, that's all I know. Because also there's a bunch of patriotic song that we learn and ring and sing ourselves.
The resistance taught you that?
Oh, yeah, because they spread all over. And a lot of activity. Prior to that, the Chinese come to Vietnam to disarm the Japanese.
Yeah.
When Japan lost the war. So, but anyway, I can witness all these activity. But of course, as a Vietnamese, we care for Vietnamese national.
Right.
We will believe in the existence of Vietnam. We believe that we have to protect Vietnam from foreign invasion.
Yes, yeah.
So we were able to run across the highway and finally end up in our friend's, my father's, my parents' friend, who live in Kinh Môn. It's the northern part of Hải Dương City. Hải Dương is a city in between Haiphong and Hanoi. And we were there just about a couple of weeks. And the first thing I did with the kind of a very special, like a warm, but they call con dươi, and very colorful, but they make it with egg. They cook with egg. Are so scary, but what can I do? My mother say that you go ahead, try it. But anyway, that's the first kind of food that I try in my life.
Mm.
Then we left Kinh Môn, find a way back to my mother's native town of Thanh Hóa. On the way, we had to beg the local authority for the subsidy, the support, in order to get back to Thanh Hóa. We walked empty-handed. That means no money alone. And so, three of us, we finally end up in Thanh Hóa, and then we went to Vĩnh Lộc, formerly is Phủ Quảng, where my mother had a make the chè lam before. They call chè lam a kind of a cake that hardened with glutinous rice and peanut, but they make it a cake. It's the flat and a big one. They heat up the sugar and mix with the powder of glutinous rice powder. I mean, the one that we call powder, and then spread it on the table with a big one, but they cut it in a square piece like that. But then once we go back there, my uncle, native town, so he's there. But he couldn't help us. Finally, my mother's got her old friend, who was the wife of ông Phủ, Phủ Hội, they call. So she offers to stay at her ranch in Nông Cống area.
Mm-hmm.
So we move ourselves to Nông Cống and stay at her ranch. They call up Đông Hoa, It's we stay there for almost a year, and we finally got all the my sibling together. My eldest brother was able to be with us, but he floated around later on, and so as my second brother. Only my next brother, my three sister were with me, and my older sister, our older brother, and myself, we work, we pound the rice.
Yeah.
We pounding the rice to make it as good rice for our family. We raise some fish in the pond. It's a lot of rice. We grind the paddy into rice and we pound the rice to make it white. Anyway, we were there for about a year. But during that time, my mother's cooked some kind of bún riêu to sell to the farmer around, the neighbors. But we do not have a good business at that time. So eventually, the food getting dry, we had to move back to the city of Thanh Hóa, whereby the whole city was demolished. Yeah. They followed the Russian war against the German during that time. So the resistance force ordered everybody to destroy their home. So we stayed in a makeup shelter.
Wow.
Anyway, we...
You know, can I ask you, when did you move to Saigon? What year did you move to Saigon?
What year?
Yes.
We went to Saigon in 1954.
So
as I told you, I've been a three-time refugee in my life. The first one was in 1946. The second one in 54. The third one in 75. So
I want to ask you about quickly about 1954 and then quickly about 1975, because we need to get to America to hear the story of how you got into politics. But I do want to hear the 1954. I want to spend a couple of minutes in 1954 and a couple of minutes in 1975. And then I want to hear.
When we moved south, I moved south earlier with my next brother, not the one next to me, but the one older, because he was in the army, artillery, and he was an officer. He was then a first lieutenant, but he had to bring the whole battalion down on a LST to the south. So
you went with him?
I went down with him, and then he put me at my former teacher's home, and he said that he paid for my, you know, lodging and boarding. And then I get into a high school, but I was there only 3 months. Then I was so homesick because my parents still behind. I want to
go back.
I decide to go back. So at that time, my parent had to write a letter to authorities so that I can go back to North Vietnam. And at that time, my father's moved back to Hanoi. And later on, they set up a supply of nước mắm store. They opened a nước mắm store. Prior to that, he worked for the French company as a chief accountant for the dredging company. But anyway, they moved it back to Hanoi, and they opened up a nước mắm supply store. And they was imposed by the resistance force of a big tax. They was so upset. My father was so upset. And later on, he found out that very critical to stay with the communists at that time.
It's important to stay with the communists. It was important to stay with the communists?
No, they go back to Hanoi working in a business, and they was imposed with a very high tax. And then apparently they lose so much money due to that. And they learn from my uncle. He was a landlord, and he was punished by the communists.
Right.
In Thanh Hoa, he advised my father to move away and don't live under their yoke. Also, the former a gentleman that used to be a very high ranking in the government, he also a victim of the communists at that time. He moved from south central Thanh Hoa. He and his wife and two girls. It's all grown up. So they talked to my father that we all should move.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was a little bit more than 10 years old. But I was able to tell them that when we go through the control port of Hanoi gas train station, I gotta make sure that they can sneak in because they control them. But I play the game with the control people. We say kind of stuff I so that they can sneak in. My parents and my friends' family can sneak in. And even by the Haizhong, it's a city in between Haiphong and Hanoi, I told them to get out because they go back and check up everything. And I was able to get the whole family, including the family of my father's, down. The gentleman later on is the head of Civic Action Department under the Diem regime.
Wow.
He's a high up.
No.
But anyway, he...
So you got out of Thanh Hoa around 1954 to go south, right?
No, not from Thanh Hoa. From...
Ginh Mo.
To the south?
Yeah, to the south.
I mean, to the south was when we moved from Hanoi down to Haiphong.
Got it.
And then I was able to talk to the French.
Right.
To have a flight back from Haiphong to the south. And so I got the whole family on the flight.
Wow.
Down. At that time, I was very an outstanding student in senior high school.
Which high school did you go to?
They call private school called Chi-Chi in Haiphong. T-R-I-T-R-I.
Chi-Chi.
And, but then once we live in the South, we had to shack up with the family of the one that was my adoptive son by my father. But he's a drinker all the time. Anyway, he has a family of 4 or 5 children. We stayed there for at least for the first 6 or 8 months until my brothers was able to save up enough money, and we bought a old house in Chilang, so we moved the whole family over there. That where we had a house to stay, but I had to quit because very hard for my father to support. So I joined the Navy.
When did you learn English?
Oh, I learned English when I was in high school. And I was an excellent one because of a friend of mine. He gave me a English song pen, a disc, and a book. He moved, he got the whole family moved to France. So he gave it to me. So I learned that one. But I was an excellent student in all subject matter.
Wow.
Except I'm not that good in mathematics. Anyway, and then when I was in the Navy, I was to be sent to America for study. But then they put me in English school for another 3 months. But I didn't have a chance to go to USA at that time. They dragged on in the Navy. I finally get out of the Navy after serving the Navy for 3 years. The first thing I got is I worked for the Johnson Drake and Piper as interpreters for the man who's the diver. They built a Saigon Binh Hoa Highway, and he's the diver to build the bridge department. He got to dive, with all the gear. We have a field hand to help him with all the gear so that before he died, he got a radio to hook up. And I recall that this guy has a bad habit. I was kidding with my friend, say that if he don't say goddamn to me at least 20 words of goddamn a day, I cannot take my lunch. But anyway, one day, after working for him for about 5 months, then I lend myself to work with the Chinese technical mission from Taiwan. Of course, as an interpreter. But then one day he was diving and he cursed at me. And I told him, his name is Bob Hankin. Say, Bob, listen to me. No more goddamn word from you. If you curse at me again, I cut your goddamn hose, the oxygen hose. And he quit the minute he said that, pull me up, had the crew pull me up. We were on a boat, yeah. You know. Pull him up, and then he was about to curse at me again. I say, Bob, this is my last word. I'm quitting. And then he toned down, want me to stay with him, and he promised no more cursing. I said, I don't care now. I'm fed up. I'm sick and tired. I stood under the hot sun of the South Vietnam, very hot. It's a tropical area. At lunchtime, I brought along the cơm nắm, the compressed rice with some
muối vừng.
Mm-hmm. That's all I did. The muối vừng is the pound sesame with salt. So that's all I had. I am the guy that is a quick learner and smart enough. When I work for a Chinese technical mission, I became assistant to the mission director. But anyway, I travel a lot on a field trip helping the farmer association to do a method of planting paddy field as well as the planting watermelon, golden melon, and other kind of agricultural product. Anyway, after working for them for almost a year, then I moved to USAID Rural Affairs. But working as an area specialist, but I got it promoted later as assistant executive director in charge of all Vietnamese field personnel.
Wow.
Well, anyway, I spent at first in Tuy Hoa working for one provincial rep. His name is Robert Byrne. But later on, when I become a successful businessman, I hire him as my assistant.
In Vietnam?
In Vietnam.
What business did you do after USAID?
Oh, I do the contracting business with my brother. The brother next to me, he died of auto accident in North Vietnam before the fall. Before we moved south. Anyway, the one that, you know, senior, and he and I, we do a lot of contracting. Mm. We got a small contract, and bigger, finally got a $25 million contract.
Wow.
To offload cargo.
In what year?
That was in 1967.
Oh my God, you had a $25 million contract in 1967.
Yeah, at that time, You know, it really had a tough time to build up out, we call out facility and running over hundreds longshoremen working for us. We were in charge of five pier plus one ammunition pier as well.
So this was all offloading and cargo for weapons?
All the commanding officer transportation or the high up logistical support commander or colonel, full bird colonel in the army. And they, at that time, you know that Cam Ranh Bay was had a stationing of 50,000 U.S. troops.
Wow.
And
so let me
done so much with contracting that the best contract we had was the $25 million contract. We ran for 2 years, and that the end of our contract only for call for 2 years. Then they bid again. We lost the second one, lost the chance for the second one. So, and we were drafted back to the Army, to the Navy again, because the war did that. Oh, I was so mad. But anyway, I had to go back there, and luckily, we worked. I had a lot of up and down. I don't want to go into detail to you. However, we finally got out by having a man offer to rub my ear to make it like I'm blind so that I can pass the medical to get discharged. I got discharged.
From the Navy?
From the Army.
From the
Navy, I switched it to the Army.
Army. And then you got out of the Army?
Yeah.
And then when did you come to the United States?
Well, that was...
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
At that 1975. But I've been in the States so many times. And I travel all over the world. When I was well up doing the contracting business, the small one, the medium size, or the big one. And then, I mean, after I get out, we built three industries. A fish meal, a dehydrated rice, and the export of shrimp. All my brother assigned me to handle, to build up all the stuff in the Delta and others. I'm like a gung-ho type. Always do it, and I never care for how much money in the bank or something. Even my brothers and I, he has 51% of the company. I have 49% of the company. We formed the Lamb Brother Corporation. However, he got all the upper hand. He used $12 million. To buy a big home, a 16-bedroom villa across from the vice president palace, and his house of 6 million, he turned it over to me. It's a corner funding firm in Haibachu. I don't care. I'm not hot or earning for more money or something. That's the kind of person that I don't care a lot. He, in Saigon, I spend my time in the Delta to build up the industry. But to be short, then when come to evacuation, I went to the airport with my wife, 6 children, my brothers with 6 children. We were able to get the DAO to sign up so that we can
evacuate,
get manifested on the fly out. And when my wife plus 6 children and 3 children of my friend, I helped them out too. So
did you
at the airport, yeah. I put my family out first and I stayed behind to volunteer to manifest the people out. I spent one day. The next day, my assistant, Bob Byrne, he advised me, by all means, it's getting critical. You better go. So I went to Clark Airfield. Instead of looking for my family, I spent another 6 hours working at the 10th city for the refugee. Then I finally go look for my family. My wife thought that I was left behind. And we finally get the family. They was under the hand of the Red Cross. Then I, myself and my family, we moved to Guam.
Got it.
We were there. It's so chaotic at that time. I finally volunteered along with many people, but I was the one that stand up because they know that I did the work at the Tencinet Airport, so I volunteered as refugee camp manager. I ran the camp for 3 months as a volunteer. Why all the barrack leaders get a minimum pay? My wife volunteered. She worked for the Red Cross to distribute milk to the newly born baby. So she got minimum pay too, minimum wage. And
can I ask you, what happened to the house? Did you get to sell the house before you left?
No.
You lost everything.
I lost everything. My brother lost
everything.
On the 21st day, we left the house empty. I bought a car in 1972 for 6 million piastres. The only car, the Fiat in the country, the four-door sedan. It's beautiful. I bought for 6 million. After I left, my mother-in-law sell it for $100.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, what lost? I lost the tree industry. I lost completely everything. And it was so stupid. When I had 400 tails of gold at the house, but I sold that because I need the more money to pay for my car. I was actually I have only a couple thousand. My wife had it, not with me. I I'm not a caring for so much about money. And then, so actually we stuck out empty-handed. And after serving in Guam for 3 months, I spent another month as volunteer before being sponsored out by the former commanding officer of transportation of Cameron Bay. They all put me in a high spot. Every single party, they invite me because I earn the friendship with the big, big one. And they like me, that kind of a person. I'm very friendly of them. And
so what?
I became a Lion Club president of the whole Cameron Bay. But anyway, I'm always active. And when back in America, the first job that Bob Burney introduced me to his friend as a pumpist, service station attendant. For the first 15 days. And
how did that feel?
Well, I say I accept my destiny. I'm so concerned about the livelihood of my family. So
you did it.
I did it anyway. Sometime when I go home, both of us, we cry too. Myself and my wife, for the kind of suffering we had to accept. But then I say that, bear this in mind, we are safe, lucky to be in his country. So that's why I pat her on the back and we comfort each other. After that, my wife landed a job as a caterer for the company, make a caterer for
the heart.
For the heart. And she worked there as an assembler. And the first car that I got in an old beat-up car, anyway. Then eventually, my brothers, he had about $10,000, so he bought a car too. Later on, his car, he gave it to me. And then after working for another company making bomb, my brother pulled me out to work for the Equitable Life as an insurance agent, life insurance agent. We worked there for a few years. Then I was on my own. I worked with my brothers on a mortgage company we set up for a while, and then I got a contract with Air France as a marketing guy for Air France. And I had $12,000 with the Air France. However, I spent so much money for the staff, because they got to go around working. I have, and then I pay for renovation of my office there. So after a while, we worked more on a mortgage with my older brother, and then my wife and I, we decided to set up a restaurant.
What year was that?
78.
That was very early.
Yeah, early.
3 years into the United States. So one of the first restaurants in the Orange County.
No. The restaurant, my wife, she's good at cooking. And she introduced all the Northern Vietnamese style. And eventually we got a flock of customers. A lot of times they stand in line to get it. So that's how successful we were. For 16 years,
wow,
we ran that restaurant. And we were victim later on. 1992, when I got elected. Not that easy, because there's another Vietnamese runner for that kind of position as well. They have an open seat, only one seat available, but there was four people running for the same seat. And I worked very hard, but thank God that I had several assistants to help me on my campaign, but none of them worth it until I got Ryan Hubris Wang. He's the one that a very dynamic guy preparing his master with USC.
Cannot believe it.
And he later on graduated with master degree, but he's very smart young man. He volunteered to help me as a campaign manager. And of course, he directed the whole operation. We have a few others volunteer as well. But I also work a line of 6 or 7 car with the loudspeaker to call Vietnamese out to vote. And at that time, not the majority of Vietnamese care about voting and care about election and others. I had approximately 3,000 vote totally, about maybe 2,100 Vietnamese. I got others, ethnic group too.
So wait, let's go back to why you decided to run for office.
Why? Because during the time that I very much involved with Vietnamese, I organized 3 different festivals and very much helping Vietnamese to stand on their own feet as well, helping them to get a citizenship and all kind of stuff. However, I found that the Vietnamese business people get a tough time getting a license from the city, and the language problem is the one. So I say that, and then few friends say that unless there is some representation with the city, it is hard for the Vietnamese to grow up.
Wow.
And that's why.
And how did?
And at that time, I was very, I was a good friend of Frank Zhao. Mm-hmm. He's a successful real estate guy. And I help him a lot, but not during the last 10 years. I distanced myself because he seemed to be a selfish bastard
You're saying that on public. You're saying it publicly.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
Wow.
That's. I hate people selfish, not have a heart for other people. Mm. The same way when my daughter's Kathy learned to be caring for a community. And I'm always active, as I told you. I organize 3 Vietnamese festivals for Tet Festival. So that's kind of a guy that I am the one who always working hard, active in order to help whoever I can to stand on their feet. And the one, even when I get elected, I push the city to devote more, to spend more budget for Little Saigon as well.
Let me ask you something. We, as a Vietnamese community, we are in politics now a lot. What do you think of the political landscape today?
Well, I believe very strongly we had the foot in the door and earned the respect of the local. And the landscape of the political arenas had changed so much, as you know, all over the United States. Of course, I was the first Vietnamese American elected into office in America. So other places, they do follow my footsteps. And there's so many outstanding Vietnamese get elected as well as joining the army. They get high ranking position in the Navy or Army or Air Force. And I'm very proud of the outstanding individual that create a kind of reputation whereby the American, the Native American, or the American as a whole have a very high esteem for Vietnamese.
Do you think it's still going?
Yeah, we not sit around and being a lazy one. We do want to see our community grow up. And you see the Little Saigon growing up like the way it is. And a flock of people from one to another. Even the HO, humanitarian operation of the former army people that they suffer in Vietnam were able to migrate to America. I helped them a lot to even get the rice and nước mắm when they first arrived. I'm always, and I organized the Vietnamese Chamber of Commerce, become, instead of taking the presidency of the Chamber of Commerce of Orange County, I pass it on to a doctor named Phạm Đặng Long Cơ. I keep the vice president position. Mm-hmm. But it's always, my life never ceased, never rest myself. And Why working for my restaurant? I mean, I work with my brothers in life insurance. Did I tell you?
Yeah.
But just for a few years. And then I moved to another thing. And the most I spend is at my restaurant. But I become a victim by the man that I allow him in the back of my office. His name was Ngo Ki. And he was just a flunky. But I allow him in the back of my office. He brought bull, he brought drink, and he messed up my office, so I kick him out. I become his enemy.
Right, right.
When there was a Chen Cheung demonstration, he was the one poor bunch of
protest
people that they don't know anything about me. But he said that because Tony Lam is the Vietnamese consul, how come he didn't come to the demonstration again? Chen Cheung.
So but you are communist. Is that what he's saying?
That means communist because, and at that time, the city attorney advised none of us participate in that one. And I followed through. I comply with that. And I was a victim of that situation. My son-in-law, that's Kathy's husband, Mike, he advised to get a law firm to help me and it to chase those bastards away from my restaurant. It's really tough, but I spent close to $800,000. I sold my investment house. It didn't appoint to pay for, and I suffer one end to another. And so after the thing died down with several sessions at the courthouse, they finally gave up, and I also at the end of my lease, the one that compete to get the whole shopping, she got it because she put it under the table to the landlord. And she became my landlord. She team up with them and she don't want to sign up a new lease. So I moved to another location. That the kind of a suffer. But we still worked for another 2 years at the new location. Then I finally sold the whole restaurant to my niece and her partner. And I spent the next 3 years helping another guy who's in competitor of that Tang Sơn Stofu, the landlord. And I was upset about that Tang Sơn Stofu. So I helped him. He also set up a Dong Phương Tofu. And I helped him to build up, get licensing, everything.
Wow.
And I'm still council member. I got retired 2022.
Wow.
No, 2002.
You retired in 2002?
From city.
But what about working? What did you do after the restaurant?
The restaurant?
Yeah.
I run the restaurant, the front end. My wife run the back end.
But you kept going?
Oh, yeah.
All the way till you retire?
Oh, yeah. So for Dong Phương, then finally my wife say she get bored at home. So we got a franchise with Lee Sandwich. once I am in my position as a councilman, it's not an easy job. A lot to learn why I'm working as a council member. A lot of things to deal with my colleague at the council. They still look down on kind of person like me get into that. And I've been through with a lot of U.S. agency, and I know to stand up like a man. I know how to stand up to face these people that they create a kind of a unfriendly atmosphere. That's what I know. But the majority don't really care about putting a lot of budget for Little Saigon. During my time, the first thing I did, my target, was to encounter the gang problem. And before I get elected, the crime rate was over 70%.
Wow.
But when I get elected and give more budget to the target team of the police department, it eventually drop it to 48.
Mm.
So it's so many things I want to do, not only just for the Little Saigon itself. I do care about business development for Westminster Mall, for example, for the Westminster Center used to be a dealer shop, dealer center there. So when they develop, we help them a lot. And it's become, Little Saigon become one of the four corners of the city that become a developing area. And
let me ask you about your idea about politics in America today. Do you think that now we have more power as Vietnamese people in the United States?
Well, I don't think we have more power, but I believe that we earn the respect of work from all walks of life, from all nationality. And I always advise to the youngster that before you involve in politics, you must be financially sound, able to take care of yourself, your family. Then involved in, of course, in community work, in many type of a non-profit organization in order to be able to be recognized by your effort. And you want to run for office, you have to learn from one end to another. You got to learn the kind of position that you are looking for. And very much that devote day and night for that kind of particular position and build up a core of support, not only from Vietnamese alone. Mm-hmm. You need the support of other ethnic, you need the support of the American, the local, your neighbor. That is my advice. And once you are elected, you are not sitting like a Mandarin there. You are what I call a servant of the community.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. No, that is a good point. Now, when you look back on your life, what do you think you could have done differently or better?
I do not regret what happening in my life. It's the destiny that lead me one way to another. And even now, I've been regretting that don't spend time to write my life story alone. I'm lazy, always busy. Even now, I'm completely retired. After I sold my Lee Sandwich franchise, I was a franchisee for Lee. That was over almost 4 years ago. I spent more time teaming up with a group of friends than spend more time on playing mahjong to pass my time instead of devoting my time
to write it.
I'm lazy, maybe, or whatever it is. For building up my house, I'm always known as Mr. Clean and Order. Even at my restaurant, it's always clean up all the condiments, care for, and that's how I build my reputation. I'm not a pessimistic guy, because nobody help you if you are pessimistic.
Right.
I always jazz people up, make them feel happy, smile with me, along with me, enjoy life. That's what it is. Because I'm always tell them, you gotta be thankful to be in America. You gotta be thankful that you are safe and healthy.
Right.
And no place in the world that have the kind of life that already in place. Every single thing, it's happened. For example, we don't throw trash on the street. They provide bin. They have a Senate, Midway Sanitary District handle all these things. The water so clean and everything. You don't expect, you don't have a tough time that you got to worry about these things. And once you drive a car, there's a stop sign. By all means, you got to stop it. See, that kind of setup, that kind of a law that America already created to build up. That's how America's grow up like it is. And I see that without the early time help, it's not that easy for Vietnamese American to melt into a melting pot here.
So let me ask you, how do you feel about President Trump today?
How do I
feel about Trump, the presidency, Trump?
Oh, I know there's a lot of think he did. I think that he created a lot of stuff, but even I am a Republican. Sometimes I still upset. I prefer not to see him stir up a lot of stuff. And now he's now can grandstanding on the peace in Gaza, but many other stuff I still do not agree with him. I'm a Republican, but you know, I am not in tune with the whole thing he does.
And I think I'm gonna guess that your political movements come from community. Your political bond with your constituents come from this idea of let's make it all work together. And I think that you can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat, but I think that's sort of like the division that we're really experiencing in America now, you know? Politicians like you on the Republican side should be able to work with somebody like me on the very progressive liberal side, right? We should be able to get things accomplished.
Many times people see me as a politician, but I see myself as a community leader.
Right.
I hate politics in a lot of ways.
Yeah, makes sense.
So the kind of a feeling, I say that possibly from going through up and down all my life, I just celebrate my 89 years old last Saturday. So we can tell that with my, from the age, I can count from the age of 10 years on. That means for the last 79 years, I earned the experience, I earned the reputation, I also suffer so much in my life. But I never complain about that. I suffer, I swallow my suffering in order to stand up like a man again. That's how I feel.
How do you feel about the new Vietnam? Have you ever been back to Vietnam?
I've been back several times.
How do you feel about young people like me who is born in the United States? We have a disconnect with the previous generation about war, about all of these ideas, and we want to move on. As a senior elder men in our community, how do you feel about people like us?
Well, I say that Vietnam need a lot of youngsters who been educated, grow up in America, and learn the good thing from America, and try to influence those in Vietnam. A lot of youngsters in Vietnam, they learn it, how bad the communist is, and how bad the government run the country is. So many things that need to be improved. But the rich and the government official just try to pocket themselves.
That's like in the United States. I don't think there's a difference. I think human beings do that. We have a tendency to moklo. To drain people, regular people.
Right, exactly. So that's why I don't know when Vietnam can at least follow the kind of a progress that USA has established for 250 years in its history. Vietnam have gone through so many wars, been dominated by Chinese, by French, by Japanese, and all kind of war going on, but they're very hard for them to learn the good things. And the rich step on the poor, the authority step on the populace themselves. And that's why I say that I just expect the younger generation learn it and wash away the kind of influence that the older generation had put on their shoulders.
You know, I think today I got a real good understanding of who you are. And I'm going to ask that if I can come back in November when Kathy comes back, or maybe set up an earlier time, I actually want to do this interview again in Vietnamese, because I want to have my mom understand what we just talked about and her friends and her generation. Oh, so if that's okay with you?
Yeah. I don't mind on anything.
Okay.
Whatever is good for the younger generation, I would do it. I am the kind of person that very open-minded.
Yes, you are very open-minded. And I think that there are generations in Vietnam that are listening to this in Vietnamese too. So we'll do it in both, because, you know, like...
I said it to you. I only expect that the younger generation in Vietnam can learn the good things. Not only from America, they can learn good things all over the world.
Yes.
Itself. And, you know, that will bring about a better understanding, a better improvement, and they make Vietnam grow, because Vietnamese, I say, very intelligent,
right,
smart, and they can really, even they are smart, intelligent, they must follow the rule of the law.
Tony, thank you so much for today.
You're welcome.
And we'll do it again in Vietnamese.
Okay.
All right. Kenneth. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trin. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.